This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM McKennie Hockey. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, for the last, I would say, 3 weeks before this, we have started every show, ended and then started every show being like, I wonder if there'll be a Jacob Chychrun trade.
Right.
It finally happened.
Wonder no longer.
Obviously, we're going to be talking about the trade deadline. It was a pretty, well, the days leading up to it were pretty crazy.
Yeah.
The actual deadline still had a lot going on, but maybe not the high impact stuff that that came before. I guess the top story, though, and this is something, again, after the trade deadline, I was barely conscious for the weekend, so I actually missed it until today. But QMJHL Commissioner Gilles Courteau, he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
He was called to testify in front of Quebec Parliament to talk about the hazing lawsuit that had been going on in the CHL. Out of nowhere, he resigned. Now,
yeah.
We don't really, like, what's great about the hockey news is that we have so many different podcasts covering so many different leagues that we have one on the QMJHL, on the Q, lovely show. And they really, really got into this in detail, more detail than I think we could. So if you want to go and get some really hard-hitting stuff on that, really, you know, informative, you know, sort of critical analysis on that, go check that out. All of our podcasts are now on different feeds. So just search up the podcast you like in any of your podcatchers. It'll be there. It's lovely. But Ryan, why don't we start out with the trade deadline? Basically, now we know, like everyone knows who moved. We don't have to dissect all the different trades and go through all that. We did that. I did that on Staff and Graph. Everyone's done that. What I want to talk about is that there were some surprises, mainly with the people who didn't move.
Indeed.
So who are you most surprised didn't move?
Well, number one, I would say James Van Riemsdyk in Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
You know, at one point, we thought he had been traded to Detroit, and it did not happen. A significant cap hit, but he is a UFA in the summer. Also, you know, the Flyers, I think a lot of people thought they would be some pretty decent sellers based on the fact that they're not in the race whatsoever. You know, they have a lot of young guys coming up. Getting good opportunities under Coach John Tortorella. And I know a lot of Philly fans were livid at GM Chuck Fletcher for not doing more. So that one was a surprise because, again, you look at JVR, a veteran who has a ton of playoff experience.
Yes.
You know, he's a guy that can really help your power play. Mm-hmm. He's got good size. He can be that guy around the net that pops in loose pucks. But there wasn't a fit. And, you know, looking at it now, I know, you know, Chuck Fletcher, I think he was saying, this summer is going to be bigger for the Flyers, and that's fine. If he didn't get what he was looking for, I guess that's one thing. At this point now, all you can really do is, you know, trade his rights before he becomes the UFA, but you're not going to get...
No, you're not getting anything for that.
Yeah, maybe you get a seventh rounder.
Who's
if you're
trading
lucky,
for?
But.
Who's trading an asset for James Van Riemsdyk's rights?
Yeah, exactly. So a missed opportunity there. Mm-hmm. Another name is Brock Besser in Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I've always been a Brock Besser fan. It does feel like maybe a change of scenery is something that could revitalize him. Always been a great goal scorer, not always had success in that regard. Still signed for a couple of seasons. Cap hit's okay. I think it's 6.5 per year.
6.25, I think.
In that range. He's 26. So it's interesting because, you know, you look at the Canucks, and obviously the season didn't go very well for them. But they have some pretty... high-end pieces, you know? I mean, Thatcher Demko was hurt. That certainly hurt them. And, you know, he was pretty spectacular in his return recently. You got Elias Pettersson.
Yep.
You know.
Quinn Hughes.
You got Quinn Hughes. You got JT Miller.
Yeah.
You do have some bad contracts, but with time, those get lessened, and then guys become UFAs. So Besser's 26. If you made the argument to me that they're not going to be good when he's still in his prime, I would accept that, but I also think it's a team, and I'm sure Canucks fans will hate me for saying this, they could turn it around fairly soon. You know, like within a couple of years, if they're smart, if they manage to get rid of some bad contracts, if they actually, you know, put together a cohesive team and get some stability there. So, I sort of get it both ways, but, you know, I think if Vancouver really wanted to make the most of a potential asset, you know, I could see teams saying, yeah, you put Brock Besser on one of our top two lines and we could turn him back into a potential 35-goal scorer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at one point, we thought that, like, at one point I had heard that he had been informed that he was going to Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then nothing, none of
classic
that happened.
Classic Penguins move.
Exactly. And then they eventually went out and got Michael Granlund, so maybe there was something involved in that trade that fell through. Maybe there was some health stuff. We don't know. On the JVR front, though, and this was funny because, you know, we were doing this live stream at the end of the deadline, and it was mentioned on with you and Rachel Dory that, you know, like, potentially, it was just spitballed that, you know, maybe the Red Wings would have flipped them,
right?
JVR, because it just didn't seem to align with any of their, like, they were sellers at the deadline. They weren't buyers, and JVR is a buying piece. You know, he's someone that a contender should add to really round out their lineup. He's not going to be a headliner by any means, but someone like extra depth. And it just didn't make sense for the Red Wings to buy on this like 32, 33 year old, you know, like pending UFA who's pretty one dimensional, and it didn't make sense. So I like texted someone being like, hey, like, what is going on here? And basically, and keep in mind, massive grain of salt on this because the trade didn't go through. So all the information that comes about that trade then has to be sort of called into question.
Right.
But I just thought it was interesting to mention that apparently that was somewhat of their thought process. Mm. At least that was what was out there. That like they were going to get him and potentially flip him for picks, because we were all like, this doesn't make sense. This goes against everything they'd just done. And they do like a buzzer beater to get James Van Riemsdyk.
Right.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And apparently that was it. But then obviously got pulled back. And apparently Chuck Fletcher was like, we didn't even really, like, I don't know how that even got reported in the first place, because lots going on there. Two players, and these are more like, because you named the two obvious ones, I think. And these were sort of like, you know, I didn't really necessarily, like, they weren't slam dunks, but I was kind of surprised that no one took a swing at these guys.
Okay.
Number one was Nick Schmaltz.
Yeah, okay.
The big thing that was holding him up is that Arizona, they have the three, because they were, you know, they laundered the Patrick Kane deal, like, they were part of that. They used up all their three retained spots. Nick Schmaltz, I believe, is at 585 or 575 for this year, and I believe the next 3 years after that. So any team that was going to get him would have to either take the entire cap hit, which very, very few contenders have that kind of space right now.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it'd be a contender trying to get him, or they'd have to get another third team in there to launder it through and then pay more. But like, this is a really good player. It's almost a point per game guy in the Arizona Coyotes. He's maintained that close to that scoring pace for the last couple of years. He's really young.
Yeah.
Like he would have been a phenomenal piece. I, like, for example, I thought the Leafs should have been in on him. You know, he seems like the kind of forward that would really help round out their forward core. And another one, and this is just based on the speculation, is like Pittsburgh really kicked the tires on JT Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was a guy who, obviously that deal hasn't even started yet. It's going to be difficult to move. But like, this is, and you know, he's arguably the worst defensive forward in the NHL other than like Patrick Kane, who did move.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be, and you know, there's all the rumors of like the clashes in the dressing room and whatnot. There's always going to be baggage there. But, you know, JT Miller is still a productive hockey player offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And for a team like the Penguins, who would just need to throw everything at the wall to keep this going, I was surprised that they didn't find a way to get him or another team get him. Like, I thought for sure, I didn't think for sure, but I thought there was a good chance that we'd see a Miller trade. And then there was reporting saying like, hey, there's a pretty good chance. And then nothing happened. So it was weird that the Canucks, other than like maybe Luke Shen that they bought, they got Filip Ronek, who is currently week to week and then is apparently commanding a $7 million AAV in his next deal that's coming up. So very, very, very odd moves from certain teams. But hey, like, yeah, so those are two that maybe weren't like slam dunks to move. Maybe I wasn't sort of like just absolutely floored they didn't move. I wasn't just blown out away. But two that I did have a feeling like these are really useful pieces to certain teams. And I'm surprised they didn't change.
Fair enough. And then I guess the only other thing to mention is the fact that Toronto now has so many defensemen. I think there was, you know, I mean, they did move Rasmus Sandin to Washington, but I think there was sort of a thought that maybe somebody else would go, maybe like a Justin Hall, who, you know, has sometimes been favored by Sheldon Keefe, sometimes not so much. You know, a very divisive player in the market. But it's interesting that the Leafs have so many defensemen right now.
I'm shocked they didn't get another forward. Like I genuinely am. Especially, like, obviously they were never going to plan for two of their three best centers to go down in the same game.
Right.
Potentially all three, because Matthews left that game and then came back. But, like, I just based on where their roster was, mm-hmm. like you said, the glut of defensemen they have, I'm shocked they didn't parlay something of that or other draft capital they got or any of that, or even the 20. Like, I would honestly, the player that I am shocked didn't get moved is the 2023 first round pick the Leafs got that, mm-hmm. that was originally Boston's.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it's great to have a 2023 pick, but, like, they are all in.
Yeah.
And that's a first rounder in a very loaded draft class. I'm shocked they didn't use that to go get a Nick Schmaltz or go get, you know, someone of value up front, because it seems like they really needed that. And then you get some injuries, and now you have Sam Lafferty as your 2C.
Right.
You know, like, who, you know, great hockey player, maybe not the best for a 2C.
Right.
But hey, you know, they had a great deadline, I think. And I think a lot of other teams did. Now, Ryan, you know, now that the dust is settled, there are a lot of teams, a lot of rebuilding teams that sold off. Mm-hmm. The rosters are barren now. But they do have young, that means that young players can step in.
That's right.
And show their mettle, show what they're worth. Who are, or I guess, who should take advantage of these new opportunities on these rebuilding teams?
Right. Young so players, the first player I'll mention is William Eklund in San Jose.
Yes.
He got called up. He was one of the AHL Barracuda's top scorers this season, so you always like to see that. And, you know, the Sharks, at least, you know, last night, put him in a great position to succeed. He was on a line with Thomas Hertl
yep.
and Fabian Zetterlund. And, of course, the Sharks had dealt away Timo Meier,
yep.
Another, you know, high-impact 200-foot winger. That's sort of what William Eklund projects to. You know, he was a top 10 pick, mm-hmm. very skilled young man, but, like I say, he can play a two-way game. Played almost 20 minutes, got power play time. That's what you want to see if you're a San Jose fan. It's like, okay, what are the kids capable of? And William Eklund, you know, their top prospect right now, so he's getting some reps. I really like what they're doing there because, you know, the Sharks, such an interesting franchise where, you know, I've liked how they've drafted mm-hmm. in sort of the past decade, but they haven't had a ton of success
yeah.
in the draft. And, you know, part of it is trading players away. Part of it, some, you know, some guys they took swings at, you know, you have a boom bust guy like Ryan Merkley, mm-hmm. Who is no longer with the organization. They traded him to Colorado. But I was looking at it today and sort of joking, like, unless the guy went to UMass, in the past sort of 6 years, they haven't had too much success. Like John Leonard was an awesome pick.
Yeah.
And they got him while he was at UMass. And then Mario Ferraro
yeah.
was an awesome pick. He ended up going to UMass. Like, technically, he was drafted out of USHL Des Moines.
He logs 22 minutes a night on their decor.
Right yeah, now. And he was a great partner for Brent Burns mm-hmm. before Brent Burns went to Carolina. So, you know, they've definitely had some wins, but then they've also had a lot of players where they just didn't quite get to that point. They were sort of that, you know, that quadruple A, as
yes.
we like to say.
Yeah.
Kind of player. I think Philip Biested was a good first rounder in 2022. He looked great at the World Juniors. But William Eklund, I would say, you know, he's kind of the first guy of this new cohort where it's like, all right, we need Eklund to hit.
Yes.
So let's see what he can do for the rest of the season. Let's put him in a top six role. And, you know, so far, I think he's in a good spot.
Got an assist.
Exactly. Yeah. The next player I'll mention is Lucas Reichel
yes,
in
absolutely.
Chicago. And this is a player that's absolutely torn up the AHL mm-hmm. For the better parts of 2 years now. And, you know, he was part of that really great German class with Tim Stützle and J.J. Pateka. You know, they all played together at the World Juniors on the line. That was really fun. And, you know, again, Chicago, we know what they're all about this year. They're,
yeah.
you know, they're a basement team. They're rebuilding. And now, of course, with Patrick Kane gone, you know, it's like everybody can move up a little bit. So Lucas Reichel, you know, that's a player where, it, you know, I like that the Hawks didn't rush him into the lineup,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Absolutely.
I think they've done a good job developing him so far.
They didn't need to.
It's true.
What's the point?
It's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we've seen it with other teams.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Where like, let's...
That's credit to them for
yeah,
like,
exactly.
realizing that situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They didn't just... pull the shiny thing out,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, put it on the mantle right away. So with Reichel, now is the time where it's like, all right, what do you got, kid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can play fast and loose if you want. It's better to play, obviously, responsibly.
Yes.
But it's like, let's just see what you got.
Yeah.
If we lose games, hey, that's cool.
We'd be doing that all season. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. That doesn't change anything for us right now. But yeah, Reichel is obviously going to be a very important part of Chicago for years to come. And now I feel sort of the start.
Yes. I mean, those are great answers. One off the top of my head is Dennis Gurianov. I mean, he's a new, like, obviously he's a new acquisition to Montreal. Mm-hmm. But I think in Montreal, I mean, this is a guy who has a wicked shot. He really does have the potential to be like a 30 goal scorer, maybe even more if you really put him in the right situation, really nurture him. He's not the youngest guy, he's 25. So he's just over the hill of like being that prospect, but he's still a young guy, still seems to be the perfect sort of disciple or reclamation project for a guy like Marty St. Louis. Because that's his bread and butter, is taking these young players who have zero confidence but great skills and basically just like making them believe in themselves again.
Right.
Which is lovely. And that's great for him. Another one too that I think he's in a great spot. Montreal has like no forwards at the moment, so he can get as much top six time as he wants, power play time, all that. I think a really good opportunity to prove his mettle in a low stakes situation too, which is great. Another one is basically every young Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman.
Sure.
I mean, look, Gavrikov had been scratched for like 7-8 games before, so it's not like they just plucked him out, but like I'm talking about like Nick Blankenberg, mm-hmm. Andrew Peak. Guys like that, this is a blue line that is really sort of barren now. Like you're missing, Zach Werenski, you're missing Jake Bean. You have Adam Boqvist isn't there. This is an opportunity for Adam Boqvist to really step up and show look, man, like I've been injured throughout this year, but I can be this staple top four, potentially top pair defenseman.
Yeah, just getting reps for Boqvist the rest of the season is so crucial because he was expected to be a pretty integral part of that blue line before the season began.
That's why they got him, and even on top of that too, Peak and Blankenberg, they're both 24, so they're really coming up to that, like, all right, you're not a prospect anymore, like you're a player. And I think through the end of the season here, like you have a pretty barren blue line. These guys, everyone's getting bumped up a notch. Mm-hmm. And another one, too, because now Korpisalo's out, is Daniil Tarasov.
Totally.
I don't think he's actually up with the team right now, but that'll likely change. I think they'll probably want to get Tarasov some reps over Michael Hutchinson, who they just got.
Yeah.
But 23-year-old goaltender, potentially, Merzlikins has had, has really struggled this year. He's not the youngest guy in the world either. So I think this is like, and goaltender just is such an integral position at this point, right? Like for anyone, we've seen great teams get undone by bad goaltending. And, look, is it the best position to put the guy in, right now? No, because he has no support around him and no defensive support. But, this is a young guy. The guy that was keeping him out of regular spots is gone. I would love to see him and Merzlikins just basically be like 1A, 1B for the rest of the year.
Right.
Improve the model. Because Columbus, this is a disaster season for them. Everything went wrong from on-ice puck luck to injuries to everything. This is just a disaster of a year. Mm. And I think if you can see growth in your potential top defenseman of the future in Boqvist, in these two guys who need to come into their own in Peak and Blankenberg, and then also in your young top goaltender who has some experiences now can get a regular role in Tarasov. I think that you can take that win, that silver lining, and build momentum off of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go hot take here.
Okay, let's go.
By this time next season, Tarasov will be Columbus' starter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that. I've been following him his whole career. I think he's an excellent goaltender. Yeah.
How tall
is he? He's everything you want. He's at least 6'2". He might be even 6'3", 6'4".
Hold on. Because this defines how Ryan likes a goalie. He's 6'5".
6'5".
So you really love him. Okay.
Even better, yes. And he got great coaching back when he was in Russia. Russia's done a very good job, obviously, developing goaltenders over the years. Especially recently. Blankenberg, too, I definitely agree there. Great story, undrafted free agent.
Yep.
Earned a contract out of Michigan last year. And a lot of similarities to Gavrikov in terms of being more of a defensive guy. But, I mean, we've seen kind of everything from Blankenberg. He got the audition last year, and then this year there was some injuries.
He's getting some power play time. Remember that game we were at watching the Leafs play them? And you remarked to me, you were like, Nick Blankenberg on the power play?
Yeah, they're just trying everything out. He's a physical guy.
Give him a shot.
He's a hard worker. I've always been an Andrew Peak fan as well. But I think those guys, you're looking at sort of like either bottom pairing guys or second pairing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with Gavrikov gone. It's like,
It just opens
shoot
up.
Shoot shot.
Yeah.
Shoot shot, boys.
It just opens up so much space for these
guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, which, so I guess sort of, you know, parlaying off this, which non-playoff team out of the deadline do you think has the best chance to really turn it around next year? Because, look, there's some really bad teams in the league right now, but based on the moves, there's some teams that are really positioned to make a quick turnaround here.
Yeah, so my first inclination, and, you know, granted they're not mathematically out of it, but for the purposes of this exercise, the Washington Capitals.
Yes.
I might talk myself out of this because they are an older team, and a lot of this rests on the health of guys like Backstrom and Tom Wilson long term. You know, Ovechkin, I think he'll, again, like, he's pretty ageless.
He'll just keep doing what he's doing.
He'll still get his, you know, 40 goals, you know, assuming he's in the lineup the whole time. They bring in Rasmus Sandin.
Who's looked great.
You know, who's young and has so much potential and has already shown himself to be a very good NHL defenseman. Also, they have Vincent Iorio, one of their top prospects, who, you know, this is a kid, and I said this on Twitter the other day, during his draft year with the Brandon Wheat Kings, when I asked scouts about him, they were like, they kind of joked like, I don't want to say anything too good because I want my team to take him. And this happens, I would say, every year with at least one player. Wyatt Johnston was another one, where guys were like, shh, don't talk about Wyatt Johnston. But they tend to turn out. And Iorio, you know, a big guy, you know, he can play physical, two-way, you know, player. You know, if he can be a regular next year, then that dramatically drops the age of that blue line core. That's a good thing.
Yes.
So I think Washington could do it, but I'm also like, are they fast enough? You know, do they have the depth? It's going to be a big summer for them, obviously, and Brian McClellan's going to have to make decisions on what the roster's going to look like. But, you know, that would be, you know, other than like Columbus being healthy and potentially getting Connor Bedard, and maybe that's a bit of a cheat code. So I'll say the Caps.
So this team as well, they're not mathematically eliminated yet, but they just sold like crazy at the deadline. So clearly they're not, they're top four, you know, just barreling towards that. It's Detroit Red Wings.
Yep.
I think, look, their division is really tough. So that's always going to be the hurdle in front of them. But I really did like what they did to the deadline. I really did think, they did basically exactly what the Caps did, where they're like, listen, we maybe could squeak in. But, like, that'll do us more harm than I think good.
Yeah.
So why don't we just take a step back, you know, like, acknowledge that, you know, we did great this, like, you know, a lot of our good players really did step up this year. But take a step back, sell off some pieces, get some assets, and then sort of, you know, turn it around for next year. And, like, the Red Wings, they learned a lot of really good things this year. Like, they got Jake Walman for nothing.
Yeah.
And then he turned into be, like, a legit, even if he regresses, because right now he's a legitimate like top pair defenseman, which is nuts. He turned Mort Seider's season around. Even if he regresses a little bit, I've looked into the numbers, I don't really see any numbers that are crazy unsustainable right now.
Yeah.
But he's still going to be a top four staple. Mm-hmm. And they got him and they locked him up, and that's a huge boost. You know, I think the Jacob Vrana situation, we don't know a lot of details about it, but like it was hanging over that organization, I think, and they were able to sort of move on. You know, cut bait, get sort of like get something in return, and then sort of move forward. And then like they signed their captain, like they locked their captain up. They found their goaltender. You know, in Ville Husso. There's a lot of players on that team. You know, that do look really good. And I think that given like they're gonna take that draft capital that they got this year. They can either use it or basically use it to wheel and deal. You know, and just like the Washington Capitals have, I think this is a team that can make a very quick turnaround. You know, Lucas Raymond comes out and has the kind of year that we thought he was going to have next season.
Yeah.
You know, like you know, the steady growth from Seider, continued play from Walman. I think this has got the bones of a really good hockey team, and we don't like you never know what's going to happen with certain teams. Like we said this last year, but like you know, we thought the Bruins were going to fall off. Well, this does seem to be their last stance. They're not going to be able to re-sign Dmitry Orlov. You know, like a lot of their good players are banked up or old and might retire. Who knows? They might take a step back this year. Then again, we said the same thing. We look foolish.
It's true.
But
that was injury-based.
Exactly. But like, then we also look at Tampa too. Like, who knows how, like, you know, this is a banged up team as well. You know, who knows if they can keep competing. So they have an opportunity to really, to make some noise. I think the Detroit Red Wings will take a step.
And
I have another one too, yeah, but.
Yeah, sorry, just going back
we
to
We might
our,
have the same one here.
No, I was going to say, going back to our previous conversation, another player that is not guaranteed to come up this season, but will be a big part of Detroit's future, Simon Edvinson.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And then another team I think is a staple is the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. They got they finally kissed the girl they were flirting with all year.
There you go.
Like they got Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah.
Now you have you get Josh Norris back in the fold.
Huge.
You know, you get sort of everyone gets healthy. Find something for Alex DeBrincat, keep him in there. Like, this is a really, really good team that had some, you know, that got ravaged with injuries. Their defense was terrible. They got rid of Zaitsev, which is a huge step for them cap-wise. Yeah. They got Jacob Chychrun, and they didn't give up a lot to get him.
It's true.
They didn't give up, really. Like, they gave up a first this year, obviously, and I think that'll be a lottery pick because they're not going to make it. But, like, to get Jacob Chychrun?
Yeah, and, you know, we've had this conversation about Ottawa a couple of times.
About a million times, too.
Where, yeah, like, they've drafted and developed really so well. That it's like they kind of don't need draft picks at this point. You know?
They need a 25-year-old stud defenseman who can do amazing things at both ends of the ice and is locked into term at a really good value.
Yeah, so now you look at their blue line and you go Chychrun, Thomas Chabot, Jake Sanderson. It's like,
Even Artem Zub, who they just re-signed. Like, that's a pretty good top four right there.
Exactly. And then you get healthy and, you know.
You get your 35-goal, 23-year-old top center back.
Yeah.
Hey, that could do some wonders.
Exactly.
You know?
So, yeah, I agree they're in a very good spot.
Yeah. Again, obviously, with these two teams, I picked two teams in the hardest division in the sport.
Right.
So that's always going to be a pillar to maybe them not, you know, making the playoffs. But, like, we look at these two teams that, you know, Ottawa's still kind of in the hunt.
They certainly are.
Detroit, I think, obviously took a step back. But these two, it would not shock me in the slightest if both these teams made it. Absolutely. All right. Look, Connor McDavid, he set a career high in points last night. Keep in mind, this is March 7th we're talking right now. And he set a career high in points with 124 last night. I believe there's still like 20 games left of this season.
Totally wild.
This is, we haven't, in the modern era where players don't chain smoke in between periods, where they monitor everything in their body, where they're at the peak, where equipment and health and everything is at the peak possible.
The quinoa era.
Exactly.
Yes.
We've never seen a player do this. This is insane. Like, even Leon Draisaitl, who is a former MVP winner, you know, he is like a solid over 20 points behind McDavid now. And he's second in NHL scoring. This guy is so far ahead of everyone. And actually, it leads into this topic is, I was watching him play the Leafs. And I'm looking at Connor McDavid, who can just score at will. Yeah. Like, literally anytime the Leafs look like they're going back into it, Connor McDavid would take it, and he'd be like, all right, it's done.
Game over.
And I tweeted him, like, how are the Oilers not undefeated? Like, how are they? This team is, you have a cheat code. You have, you know, you have Mike Tyson, Mike Tyson's punch out. You have, you know, Jordan in the early NBA games. Can anyone stop McDavid?
Yeah, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets did on the weekend, and
somehow.
I mean, they didn't stop McDavid, they stopped the Oilers. Yeah. I guess that's the more...
They played Jack Campbell.
Yeah. You have to blame sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? You can't... I mean, Stuart Skinner can't play...
But, like, Connor McDavid willed that game to being what it was.
It was tight.
It was tight.
And, like, watching that game, it's like, you know, the Jets were up 2, and, like, in the third period, and I was like, this ain't over. It's like, I could easily see the Oilers hanging 3 on them just in this period. That would not surprise me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Didn't come to be, but, man, they came close.
Yeah.
You know, I think heading into the playoffs, I mean, yeah, goaltending is going to be huge.
That is their X factor, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a huge X factor. When I look at players that can actually slow down McDavid, because, you know, it's like the old Shaquille O'Neal thing, you know, you can only hope, you can't stop him, you can only hope to contain him.
Yeah.
You know, I would look at, like, obviously Colorado's the template. You know, they swept the Oilers last year, and when you have a defenseman who can skate like Cale Makar, and, you know, and a center that can skate like Nathan MacKinnon, then you put yourself in the best position to
respond. Maybe not contain, but respond.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I would say minimize.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best you can do. He's going to get his points. The other team that comes to mind is Dallas because they have Miro Heiskanen.
Yeah.
Who very much the same in terms of being a mobile defenseman who's super smart. And then you look at Dallas and they're such a deep team. And they're a pretty big team, too.
Yes, they are.
You know, that would be another squad that I would look at and say, okay, that's probably not the best playoff matchup for the Oilers, especially because they can respond with a guy like Jason Robertson, who can also put up a ton of points. Not as fleet of foot as McDavid, but nonetheless, totally dangerous out there. So those are two teams I would look at and say, like, okay, that's, you know, those would be the ones that, you know, the Oilers might want to try to avoid if possible.
Before the trade deadline, I would unequivocally say, like, I would unequivocally say that, look, McDavid is incredible. The Oilers are a flawed roster, and I do think that, you know, he can't play all 60 minutes. So there are going to be, you know, like, at least, you know, in the playoffs, who knows what his ice time's going to be, but there'll be, like, 30 minutes of the ice where he's not out there.
Yeah.
So you can make the most of that. Then they went out and they got Matthias Ekholm.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, well, they're not so flawed anymore.
Right.
That was a phenomenal, like, give Ken Holland his flowers. I've been extremely hard on him because I think, and deservedly so, but that was a phenomenal trade.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I've been screaming from the rooftops that the Oilers need to do all season.
Yeah.
He went out and he took a swing and he got a phenomenal, exactly what they needed, basically.
Yeah.
The only better person they could have gotten was Jacob Chychrun, but Ekholm is still just friggin' incredible.
Yeah. And Ekholm, a lot more experienced than Jacob.
A lot more experienced. He's been to a cup final.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that grizzled, you know, sort of quality to him. Mm-hmm. I sound like a boomer, but it's true.
Right.
And so, no offense to boomers, Ryan. I know that
I'm not a boomer.
but then I like they still have an Achilles heel in goal. Like they like otherwise, I don't really think anyone can stop McDavid, especially McDavid in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like we saw what that like that Oilers team last year had like, was playing like Cody Ceci on the top pair, you know, and Tyson Barry. Had like a legitimately like non-mobile Duncan Keith back there, like being the sort of like the linchpin of their PK and all that. And then they had Mike Smith, who was handing the other team a goal like once a game,
right?
From you know from behind his own
sometimes
net, basically.
Literally.
I mean not figuratively, like he was literally handing a goal to another team,
yeah.
And they still made it to the conference finals and only lost to you know one of the most dominant Stanley Cup champions we've seen in the Cap era.
Yeah.
This is a much better team than that. Like right now, the way the Oilers are, this is a much better team than that Oilers team was last year. But they're and their Achilles heel is goaltending in the sense that, like, Stuart Skinner, I think is great. We haven't really seen him in the playoffs, so obviously we don't know. But for right now, he without him, this would be a disastrous season for the Oilers.
They might not be a playoff team without him.
They're still like they were still barely on the bubble even with him for
yeah.
a while. But. You like he tweaks something in practice, and suddenly you're relying on this version of Jack Campbell, who is in maybe like the worst mental headspace I think he's been in his career. Like, you know, we all know, like, you know, I covered Jack Campbell for a season. Like, we all know the ups and downs he goes through, and when he's down, he gets really down. It's been nothing but downs this season, really. He is like he's the worst goalie in the league right now, and he is like that. The Oilers should have won that game against the Jets. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid willed that team. They, you know, they were down by two, like. Two different times in that game, he came in and he made that game close. And if it wasn't for Jack Campbell putting up, I believe it was like a 740 in that game, would have been different. And
yeah.
and that is their Achilles heel, is Stuart Skinner, who is largely unproven himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he seems to have solidified their goaltending position, but, like, he goes down or he falters. Like, you know, he plays his first playoff games and he falters. Then you're relying on this version of Jack Campbell. It doesn't matter how many goals Connor McDavid scores because you cannot like you cannot trust him. I think that's the only way someone can stop him. But like, man, this Oilers team, I think they did everything they needed to do outside of getting like a surefire number one goaltender to replace the one that they just signed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like they did everything they could to shore up this roster. So kudos to Ken Holland. Kudos to the Oilers. Let your star cook.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. We all know that Connor McDavid is the leader for the Hart.
Yes.
I mean, if like legitimately, if anyone else says anything,
you're lying.
You should get your credentials revoked. I think. We should publicly shame them. I don't think we do enough shaming in the public square in these days. I think we need to do the shame with ringing the bell behind
right.
them and all that.
Throwing tomatoes.
Tomatoes,
yeah.
Tar and feather, you know, all
right.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Who's your runner up though?
All right. So this is a very interesting question because some of my best candidates are like on the playoff bubble.
Yes.
And I feel that if you're going to be the MVP, then your team has to make the playoffs. Now, if things should go terribly wrong for the Oilers and somehow they miss the playoffs, McDavid is still
the MVP slammed
because down. I mean, he like I will make an exception for the season he is having because it's just out of this world. Having said that, you know, like the first name that comes to mind is Matthew Tkachuk. mm-hmm. in Florida because, I mean, his numbers are just off the charts, just in terms of his impact
and
everywhere.
What would they be without him?
Exactly. What would they be without him? Now, the problem is, you know, what would they be without him? They would be, right now, also not a playoff team. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's the struggle I always have when I vote for these awards, in particular the Hart, is what actually matters.
Yes.
Right? So another candidate, and again, they're not in the playoffs yet, but they're in a slightly better spot than Florida, is Tage Thompson with Buffalo.
Yes, yeah.
Because you look at, you know, what he's been able to do for that team, the way he's led them offensively, been, you know, one of the best breakout players in the league this season. And again, where would the Sabres be without Tage Thompson? And obviously they're getting contributions from other mm-hmm. guys. But
he's been incredible.
He's been incredible. Yeah. So it's tough because I guess if I'm only voting for runner-up, then I would have those guys on the ballot because I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm just saying that they were worthy. Mm-hmm. But if I had to go for a guy on, a playoff team, then some of the names I would look at as runner-up would be Jason Robertson in Dallas, mm-hmm. Nikita Kucherov in Tampa, and then David Pastrnak in Boston. Mm-hmm. Boston's the tough one because they have so many excellent players.
And they have a goalie who's going to win the
Vezina.
Yeah.
It's very hard to win the Hart winner and the Vezina winner. Mm-hmm. But, again, you look at how Pastrnak has played this year, and he's been phenomenal, so...
Well, it's like having one guy win the Hart and another guy winning the Vezina be on the same team. It's kind of like when the movie. It's kind of like when a movie wins Best Picture, but not for Best Director.
Right.
And it's just like what do you mean? Like it's you just said it's the best movie. Why wouldn't makes sense for me? And this might sound a bit shocking, but it's Kirill Kaprizov for me.
That's a good one.
The Wild run through him.
That's true.
Without him, they would be like in the like Vancouver. Chicago, like that. That is like he is their offense, and he's got some pretty wild numbers, obviously this season. You know, 73 points and everything, but like he is their offense, and
right.
and obviously with the Hart, we look at a guy who you know, like we look at it as being like, what would they be without him?
Totally.
And they don't have another star, like offensive star. Like Matt Zuccarello was great. Mm. Matt Boldy is really coming along. Mm. You know, guys like that. Joel Eriksson-Ek is great defensively. But in terms of like actually putting the puck in the net, they don't have anyone even close to the level of Kirill Kaprizov. He is far and away their star, and he has led them this year. Like he is, you watch any game tape, you know, like over the weekend, like or I believe it was 2 weekends ago, like the Wild pulled out a crazy game, 3-2 in OT, I believe it was against the Canucks. I can't remember, but I was watching, and I do know that Kirill Kaprizov scored all 3 goals. You know,
right.
It's like he's a remarkable player who is just dragging this team. Into the playoffs, kicking and screaming. He would be my runner-up. McDavid, far and away the leader. You brought up a lot of great points, but Kaprizov, I mean, he's...
That's a great one. Kaprizov is a very good
one. He's the reason why Minnesota is still in the hunt right now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if they lost him, you're done, man.
Yeah.
Game over.
Game over, man.
All right. So now we are going to go into rapid fire.
Yes.
For me this week. And I you know, like, we always do, like, music and movies and whatnot, but I want to get to know, like, the real Ryan. You know?
Okay.
And,
scary.
And I think that means we got to go back to your childhood.
Okay.
And so what I was going to say, or maybe not, like, this could be from any point in your life, but I would think it would probably be in your childhood.
Okay.
What is the dumbest injury you've ever gotten?
Dumbest injury?
An injury you've gotten, but in, like, the dumbest way.
Oh, okay. So this is actually from my adulthood, which is sad.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first house that I, like, bought, mm-hmm. I was doing...
Oh, weird flex, but okay. All right.
Yeah. I was in the basement, and I was doing laundry, but there was, like, clothes at the top of the staircase,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to see what was there. Like, I was like, did I leave socks there? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. So instead of walking up the staircase, and keep in mind, I was like... Was I like 30 at this point? Yeah, like I was a grown man.
Yeah.
Instead of just walking up the staircase, I'm like, I know, I'm just going to jump in the air so that I can see the top of the staircase from where I am. And it was a low ceiling because it was a basement, so I just smashed my head. I just literally jumped into the ceiling.
Did you get a concussion?
No.
Did you leave it dead?
And I felt dumb.
Well, probably because you got a traumatic blow to the head.
Exactly.
Yeah,
just like straight up like the point at the top of my head.
So my mine, okay, on the surface, mine sounds concerning. So please don't be worried about me.
I feel like it should be your motto.
Yeah, on the surface, this sounds concerning. That's actually the name of my memoir.
Yeah, yeah.
The Mike Stevens story. On the surface, it sounds concerning.
Exactly.
I'm just, yeah. So this was, like, during the pandemic. So, like early, like, you know, March, April. Mm. And I was playing 2K. And I was really, like, I'd started a franchise mode. Connor knows this story. Like, our producer is laughing behind the scenes. He knows the story. And that why I said, don't be concerned, because Connor was concerned about me in
this.
Right. So I'm like, don't worry. But... So we're playing 2K. Keep in mind, like, everything shut down. Like, you know, this is right at the height of when everything happened, and everything is like super uncertain too. Like this is when this is also at the point where everyone was like just in their houses, like getting like blasted drunk, like you know, in the middle, like you know, just every night, or like doing crazy stuff on live streams. Me, I was just like, I'm gonna get really good at 2K. Okay. Like, I'm going to start the New York Knicks. I'm going to become the GM of the New York Knicks. And I'm going to build this team into a dynasty. Gotcha. And I'm in the playoffs. And keep in mind, I have, like, the control set to pretty, because I wanted to challenge myself. So I have the, I have the slider set, like, pretty low. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not just, like, a shoe-in. And I think I missed probably, like, 14 threes in a row.
Uh-huh.
Like, and like, they were supposed, like, I had always, the shot timing was perfect,
right.
And yet they were still clanking, and I was losing this game. I was furious. Like, I got, like, every once in a while, you get the gamer rage,
yep,
like,
totally.
The red miss, and I was just furious. And I remember I didn't know what to do with my anger. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, like, you know, I was at an old, like, I had a roommate, so I couldn't, like, yell, because my roommate would be like, why is my roommate having, like, a psychotic break in the room next to me? Like, what's going on here? And it would be embarrassing for me to be like, no, I just missed some shots at 2K. And so what I decided to do to channel my anger in a moment of stupidity is slap myself in the face.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I just need to get like some anger out. So I'm like, ah. And then I wake up the next morning to my ear just searing pain. Like it feels like someone is taking an ice pick and just stabbing me in the ear,
wow.
Like in the ear canal. And then it closes up completely. And I'm like, this is weird. And keep
you
mind,
yourself in the ear?
Like, I slapped myself in the face, and I think the vibration of the slap was so hard. So I had to go to the doctor. But keep in mind, this is like the start of the pandemic. Like, this is terrifying. So I basically had to wear, like, as I put on every bit of PPE I could.
Yeah.
You know, like double masked it. I had like rubber gloves. I looked crazy. Go there, the doc takes a look, he's like, yeah, you ruptured your eardrum.
Wow.
It's like, you're an idiot. You obviously have an ear infection now because of that.
Yeah.
And you ruptured your eardrum. Here's some antibiotics. Like, don't wear headphones for the next month. Like, just take it easy. But I had to sit in a doctor's office, start a pandemic, middle of it, and explain to my doctor why this happened.
Right. Slap myself.
And I don't, keep in mind, we were all wearing masks, but you can just see, like, the disappointment in another adult's eyes. I'm just like, you seem like a good kid. Like, you seem like you had a bright future. And it's just, yeah. So... that's for sure the dumbest injury I've ever gotten.
That's a good one.
And kids at home, learn, like I have now, learn healthier ways to channel your anger, especially the game of rage, because it will get you. Okay, so my next one, and this really is going back to childhood now.
Okay.
And keep in mind, this is like dumbest, I guess. What's the dumbest way you got in trouble back? Like what is the... You don't strike me as a real troublemaker. I mean, you were in the punk scene, so I feel like you got up to no good. But like, what did little Rascal Ryan do back in the day that got you like a slap on the wrist? And I have to think about this for myself too.
Oh, okay.
I was a bad kid, but I have to think about it. Yeah.
This is a good one because it was sort of like like my parents found it funny, but it was like my brother and I have a brother who's like 3.5 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were teenagers, and I remember this was on like New Year's Eve, because I remember when we did it, I was like, oh man, we're going to get in trouble. It's like, I hope I'm allowed to like go out tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We were goofing around in the basement and we were kind of wrestling, and, he ended up tackling me into there was like an old couch downstairs, and my shoulders went flush with the arm of the couch, and we literally snapped the legs off the bottom of the couch. And then we had to tell our parents that we just like wrecked the couch downstairs, and they actually just thought it was funny. So like literally, my dad gave us a pretend slap on the wrist.
That's very funny. I think like one would be like when I was in grade one, and this it's funny how certain things seem like a bigger deal when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like in recess, me and my friends, I think we were playing some, like, we were pretending we were like the Justice League or something. And, you know, everyone goes out for recess, but we decide to just like stay inside and like explore the back halls of the school, you know, like during recess. We got caught, and I remember being like just terrified. I'm like, I'm gonna get put to death. Like, this is,
right.
You know, so that was dumb just because A, the principal was like, stop crying and shaking. Like,
yeah.
I'm just gonna call your parents, it'll be fine. Like, yeah. Just go outside for recess, you're an idiot. I would say another one, and this is like, I'm glad my sister can forgive me for this these days, but like, okay, so back in the day, like my sister is 5 years younger than me. I was born in 96, she was born in 2001. And so she used to beat the crap out of me. Like, she was a very just like aggressive kid. The most mellow person in the world now, but she, like, as a kid, like she would pull the move, like whenever we'd like play fight or whatever, she'd pull the illegal move where you go on your back and then just start jackhammer kicking. Like, that's not fair,
right.
but she would. But there's one time I think like I was doing something, like I was watching TV or something. She just decided to come in and mess with me. And I remember she hit me in the head with like a metal fire truck toy.
Ooh.
And I'm just like, ow. And so I got like really mad. And so she runs down, like she runs through the kitchen into like what looked like the basement door. And so I thought, I couldn't see her after she went past the door. So I thought that she had run down the stairs to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out she was like just hiding right behind the door. So I go and I'm like slamming the door and I'm trying to like close it. Little did I know her fingers are right there.
Ooh.
And so she starts like screaming. I got in so much trouble and I didn't even know. Like, I didn't, but like, you know, she'd just come in and like, you know how like your siblings, like you're just sitting there and your siblings just come in and just like hit you and then run away.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what happened. Yeah. And she's, for some reason, she's just hiding behind the door instead of running down the stairs. And I'm like, and I'm trying to like slam the door because I'm mad. And yeah. Gets her fingers. Everything was fine. Like, she didn't, nothing was broken. Like, it wasn't even really cut, but it was just like, you know, if you've ever gotten your fingers cut in a caught in a door, you know it hurts.
Totally.
She was like 5 or 6 at the time, so obviously she's gonna make a big deal about it.
Sure.
Drama queen in that regard. Yeah, and so I got like, you know, no phone, or like, not, I didn't have a phone at that point, like no TV for like a month or so because of that. And still haven't forgiven my parents, but hopefully my sister has forgiven me. I only had two. I thought we were gonna get pretty deep, and we did. So that is the end of the show. Like we said before, all the podcasts on the THN network now are on their new feeds.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own individual feeds. Go check those out so you're not just inundated with every show. You pick and choose, but I do say they all are pretty great. If you want to listen to this episode, any past episodes of this show or any of the other podcasts, thn.com/podcast. That's where all our archives are online. Ryan, this was lovely.
Indeed.
I guess we will see you next week.